Welcome to the New World Order Disorder, a weekly broadcast hosted by Dr. Gianni Hayes. Stay tuned. Things are about to get interesting.
This is actually Gianni tonight. I know I have been away for a couple of weeks here. You know, last week when I was gone, Andy Nunes came on and did my show. And you know what? Andy and I are co-authors on some books, and we both do a regional TV and radio show about local community people. And I knew he was good. I helped train him, so that's why I asked him to take my place. And I think he did a great job. But I lined up the schedule, and I had both John DiNardo and Eric Gilkerson. I'm sorry, let me do that again. Gilbert Erickson. I always swap that around somehow. I don't know. But Gil Erickson on last week, and they were both on at the same time for an hour. Well, I brought them back this week because I didn't get a chance to talk to them, and I know they have lots and lots of information. So this first hour is John DiNardo, and the second hour is Gilbert Erickson, because though they're both talking about Wormwood and the Bible, so to speak, John's focus is more physics and this whole thing about this planet X, which is Wormwood, and Gil's focus is more revelation in terms of Wormwood. So that's who the first guest is tonight, and I welcome you, John. But before I do, I want to give you a little intro here, because I know you've been on my show every week. In fact, you've been on my show for years, on and off. I'm always pleased to have John on. He's always a gentleman. He has lots of great information. And I know that he doesn't go into a little cubbyhole and just go by his researches. He researches other scientists and other scientific theories before he comes out with anything he has to say. And, you know, if you go to Sheldon Day's site, which is thelightoftheday.com, thelightoftheday.com, Sheldon puts John's shows up there and other information by John. And I encourage you to do that, because Sheldon is a great guy, and he has a terrific site, and he's on top of things, too. So you might find a whole new world when you go to thelightoftheday.com. So please do that to check out the write-up on John, and to check out what this show, it'll be rebroadcast on that site as well. So, as I said, John is an expert on Planet X, and he actually introduced me to Gilbert Erickson. But John earned his degree in science education from Keene University, and he had electives in physics and biology, as well as having taught high school physics before returning to an electronics career during his 4.5 years in the Marine Corps. So he graduated from the Naval Air Technical Training Center in Memphis, Tennessee, as quote-unquote scholastic honor man in the Aviation Electronics Technician School. He also completed evening college courses in electrical engineering and in advanced mathematics, particularly dealing with differential equations. And this was at Farley Dickinson University, which is an excellent university. In fact, my daughter looked at that school when she was going to college, and I had interviewed a young student there for a newspaper article, a magazine article I was doing. Additionally, John performed troubleshooting, fault analysis, and design of electronic circuitry, working for numerous corporations, including Bendix Avionics and Dynalco in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and with the McGraw-Edison Corporation, as well as Industrial Timer Corporation. Both of those are in New Jersey. So this, along with all of his studies and his work for electronic companies, has given him some diverse experience in the principles and analyses of electronic circuitry and advanced design, analog and digital electronic circuits. Guess what? I don't really know what that means, in spite of having a PhD. That's a whole different field. So, you know, you want to know more about that, you're going to have to write to John. But he worked 20 years with Bell Telephone Laboratories and an additional 2 years with Mobile Vision, Inc., which is a police car video system. So he has quite a technical background, so being able to talk about this whole thing on Planet X, he makes use of his electronics and his physics background. So welcome, John.
Hi, Gianni. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you know what? I always like having you. Of course, I'm partial, John, because we're both Italian, but that's okay. But I like what you have to say. You know, I don't always agree with you, but I think that your message is vital. And I know that tonight there were certain things you asked me if we could really talk about. And I want you to tell the listeners a little bit about, first of all, Planet X, and then let's go to the first point you want to talk about.
Okay. Virtually all the Planet X researchers that I have read, their publications state that this Planet X is a brown dwarf star. Excuse me, a brown dwarf star, which is probably, very conservatively estimated to be about 1,000 Earth masses. That's the definition of a brown dwarf star. And this, what the government, the U.S. government, in fact, NASA, before they were muzzled, also claimed that this is probably a brown dwarf star that comes into and out of our solar system at very precise time intervals throughout history. Very great time intervals of 36 and a half centuries. Every 36 and a half centuries, this planet comes into our solar system on a highly stretched elliptical orbit, sort of like the shape of a bicycle chain. If you can visualize a very long, a ridiculously long bicycle, 50 feet long, imagine the bicycle chain with one of the links on this chain painted red, and that link would represent Planet X. And as the person pedals up a very, very steep hill on this very long bicycle, you can see that red link slowly revolving through the chain and around the front sprocket wheel, the pedal sprocket wheel of the bike, and that sprocket wheel would represent our sun. The chain of the bicycle chain would represent Planet X's orbital path. And then, of course, as the person pedals up this very steep hill, the red link on the chain would then eventually reach the rear wheel sprocket wheel, and that rear axle sprocket wheel, and that would represent some distant sun around which the Planet X loops around. So this Planet X loops back and forth around two suns, according to most of the researchers that I've read. And this is how it maintains its a travel, sort of its periodic, regular precision travel, sort of like two tennis players on a tennis court. You need two tennis players in order to bat the ball back and forth. If there's only one tennis player, that ball will go out and never return again. However, this planet has returned every 36 and a half centuries with remarkable precision. And we have found archaeological evidence of this, anthropological evidence, and geological evidence that this of the disasters that occurred at these precise time intervals, 36 and a half centuries ago, for example, going back from the present time, was the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt. And geologists tell us that at that time, around 1660 BC, was the tremendous explosion of the Santorini volcanic caldera.
I was just there, John. When I was speaking in Greece, I went to Santorini. So I was just there, and it's a pretty exciting ruins. And, you know, the whole fact that the people were in a position of, you know, their daily activities that they were doing when this happened, especially when the pyroclastic flow went. But, you know, those ruins have again been pretty much covered over by a 1956 volcanic eruption from the same one. The first one was in 1450, this one, B.C. The last one was 1956. But go ahead, John.
Yeah, well, that's good that you were there. So you got a chance to be present in the footprint of history, so to speak.
Right.
You know, at that time, and some of the records I've read from geologists indicate that it was around 1650 B.C., and that would measure exactly pretty close to 36 and a half centuries ago. At that time, in the book of Exodus, chapter 9, God reveals through Moses that God commanded Moses and Aaron to scoop up handfuls of ashes from the furnace and cast them up in the air in the face of Pharaoh and his magicians. And God said, when you do this, the entire land of Egypt will be covered with ashes. And when Moses and Aaron indeed cast up the ashes in front of Pharaoh and his magicians, this cloud of ash from the volcanic explosion must have drifted down at that time, downward from the island of Crete southward to Egypt, where it covered the entire land of Egypt and it caused blistering and covered the entire nation with ash. This is a way, this geologic evidence is a way of indexing the last incursion of Planet X into our solar system. And that explosion of the Santorini volcano was just one of many plagues. Actually, it's called the 10 plagues of Egypt that are recounted in the Bible. And amazingly, this information, these 10 plagues of Egypt, are corroborated by Egyptian historians who survived these great disasters that occurred at the time of the Israelites' exodus from Egypt. It's called the Ipuwer, I-P-U-W-E-R, papyrus that was found in around 1820 and is now in the museum in Leiden, Holland, Netherlands. This document corroborates much of the testimony in the book of Exodus. The plagues began with the sweeping of the earth of red iron, probably what must have been red iron oxide dust that this huge planet, this brown dwarf star, drags in with it gravitationally along with a lot of other space debris, because if it's great size, it has a tremendous gravitational attraction. It's like a vacuum cleaner as this brown dwarf star travels through deep space and approaches its entry point into our solar system. It picks up lots of debris, especially as it passes through what is known as the Oort cloud, which is a huge sphere way, way out beyond our most distant planet, Pluto. And this sphere is comprised of billions of comets, like many, many gnats, like swarms of gnats, but they're formed into a huge spherical structure which encloses the entire solar system. So when Planet X comes in, it's tremendous gravitational attraction, like a vacuum cleaner.
But it's not going to actually hit the Earth, right, John? Planet X is not going to hit the Earth.
No, it cannot, because it's estimated, again, by NASA, before NASA was muzzled back in 1983. They reported to the New York Times, and I have the article right in front of me, the actual article that I photocopied, and they reported to the Washington Post in 1983 also, that it is probably a brown dwarf star. And by definition, the puniest brown dwarf star is about at least three Jupiter masses. Now, the mass of Jupiter is 318 Earth masses. So if the puniest brown dwarf star, Planet X, is three Jupiter masses, that's somewhere close to 1,000 Earth masses. So you can imagine if it ever did hit the Earth would be disintegrated and never come into existence again. Because they have noticed, what I have heard anyway, there is such a thing as repulsion force that keeps these large bodies from colliding with one another. But there's more to it than that. It's a very difficult explanation scientifically, because only the highest level scientists would have greater, more accurate theories than what I just expressed to you as to why it does not strike Earth. But what it's doing, its focus is the sun. Remember now, the sun has a mass of 1/3 of a million Earths. one-third of a million Earth masses, that's 330,000 Earth masses, is our sun, and planet X is much, much smaller, about 1,000. So sun is about 330 times the size of planet X. So because of each of these two bodies' tremendous mass, they have an incredible gravitational attraction to one another. As planet X approaches our sun, it has to go past all the planets first before it gets to our sun. When it comes into our solar system, and then it loops around the top of the sun, sort of like David's slingshot. Remember, mm-hmm. David, how he swung that slingshot and threw the rock at Goliath? Well, that's how this planet loops around our sun, comes into our solar system from below this huge dish, this imaginary disk in space, which we call the ecliptic. It's an imaginary disk on which all the planets revolve around the sun. And if you can visualize yourself on a huge lake, a very placid lake, circular lake, great in size, and it's very dark, and there's a raft in the center of the lake with a very huge light lighting up the entire lake. That light would be analogous to our sun. The surface of the lake would be analogous to our ecliptic plane. Now, there would be, imagine, people in rowboats at various distances from that center light in the center of the lake, floating on rowboats and slowly rowing around this huge light. Each one of these people on rowboats at various distances would represent one of the planets. And now, imagine also that this lake is extremely deep, like maybe several miles deep. Okay.
I think we've got a fairly good idea of what you're referring to. And because you only have 40 minutes, I have so much that I want you to get in.
Oh, okay.
Let's now talk about, before we move on to your other points, but let's talk about why this is important to us and why you keep saying that NASA was muzzled. So let's get these two points out right now.
Okay. Well, the government... people in power, they were not on the ball. The actual National Security Agency back in 1983, when the search for Planet X was being vigorously conducted by the people at NASA, they were sending up space probes. They sent up what is known as the infrared astronomical satellite, which would use infrared light, which would detect the infrared light emitted from this distant planet. They knew where it was. They had calculated it. They had seen that it had tremendous gravitational pull. They could not see it, but they could see its effects in the perturbations or the pluckings of the outer planets, Uranus and Neptune, at one particular point in their orbital path. And they were afraid that this planet might be intruding into our solar system. After all, when you have a mass that large and a mass as large as our sun, the Newton's law of gravity states that two masses, large masses, will be gravitationally attracted to one another. Just as when I drop a rock, I release it and allow it to drop to the ground, it's going to be attracted to the mass of planet Earth. So they were afraid that this planet would be intruding into our solar system and cause damage to our planets. At a distance, mind you, with gravitational forces acting on Earth and magnetic forces acting on Earth also. So they went up and they discovered this planet, and before NASA was muzzled by the National Security Agency, they got to put out two landmark articles, one in the New York Times prior to the launching of the infrared astronomical satellite, in which they detailed the search for Planet X and historical evidence indicating of its true existence for over 200 years by the astronomers of the world. Okay, now after this launching, stated in the January 30th, 1983 New York Times article, the infrared astronomical satellite, IRAS, came back with the pictures of Planet X, and it was heralded in the Washington Post of December 30th, 1983, which I have the article too. At that point, the National Security Agency realized that this could cause panic among the people because they knew this planet was probably intruding into our solar system by gravitational principles. So they decided to muzzle everybody in NASA. There was no more information allowed to come out. Fortunately, it was leaked out in a couple of publications since then. I have the 1984 U.S. News and World Report thing. So what happened was, essentially, they will kill people for talking about it, because if they were afraid that the public could be panicked. And if the public panics, you know what happens? They no longer follow the dictates of the government. They no longer remain fearful and subservient to the power elite who
But John, what are they going to do, though, when this thing starts to get closer and closer? And we're seeing some of the effects now, as you say, that we're seeing the earthquakes and we're seeing temperature changes and many other things that I want to talk about. What are they going to do? What's the government going to do when people get smart enough to figure out something is
really
going on?
They're going to save themselves and let us die.
Well, that's
their plan.
My guess was. All right, hold on, John. We're going to come right back after a quick commercial. Listeners, don't go anywhere, but do go to TalkStreamLive.com and hit my name 3 times. Thank you. Listeners, here we are. We're back from break, and I have John DiNardo on with me, and you're listening to the New World Order Disorder on the American Voice Radio Network, one of the largest radio networks around that's heard everywhere, all over the world, and we have many different ways to listen. John, before we continue with what you're talking about, I think it's really imperative because we have such a short amount of time, and it drives me nuts that every time I get you on, the time goes so fast. And I know you'd like to go into detail on things, but I kind of have to shepherd you into some direction here. Tell us what we should be seeing, or if we are seeing, the signs of the approach of Planet X.
Okay, Zechariah Sitchin states in his landmark book, The 12th Planet, around page 240, that some of the first signs are great torrential rainfall and tremendous flooding. In fact, the Egyptians talk about that. They call it the usual inundations, the usual inundations are the first signs of this disaster. Of course, all kinds of severe meteorological events mark the occurrence, the precursor signs of this incoming planet, this brown dwarf star. You will see windstorms, straight-line windstorms like you've never seen before, up to 100 miles an hour. I have many of them documented. I've been documenting severe weather reports from the Weather Channel since 2004. I have about 240 hours on 6-hour videotapes of nothing but severe weather reports, often winds up to 100 miles an hour, straight line winds. We had a hurricane that hit land just a week or two ago. It was actually a hurricane on land. That's a real anomaly. We've had hailstones, incredible size hailstones. I have numerous reports videotaped of hailstones that are baseball size and even softball size, and the smashing of the cars and the houses that these hailstones have done. I have pictures, for example, of a tree, a car hanging from a treetop after a huge flood came in Virginia, and the water receded, and this car was actually hanging from the top of a tree. I got that on videotape. The most severe weather you can imagine, temperatures swinging wildly from warm to cold and cold to warm in a matter of hours. I have reports of a 25-degree temperature drop in an hour, things like that. Because what's happening is the jet stream is getting whipped like a bullwhip. It used to be rather horizontal, or the jet stream denoting the front of the cold, the border of the cold air coming from Canada and the warmer air in the United States. Well, that front typically back in the 70s was rather horizontal. Now it looks like a capital W. And I noticed that now I believe that Planet X is actually coming up from below, you know, below that lake I was talking about.
Right.
Like a barracuda or a great white shark coming up from way, way miles deep below the water of that lake and then shooting up through the surface, breaking the surface, which is our ecliptic plane with all our planets, and then coming over the top of Earth's head, over the top of Mars's head first, then Earth's head, and over the top of Mercury's head, et cetera, until it loops over the top of this great white shark, loops over the top of the sun, and then comes back down again into the water and proceeds to go back where it came from, deep, deep below the lake, in space. That's when it does that, we have all kinds of anomalies. And what I've it's appears to me that it is now coming up from that and ready to break the surface of the lake, coming up from below to break the surface of our ecliptic plane. And the reason I say that is because I see now a drastic change since 2009 to now, a drastic change in these what were anomalous jet stream patterns, making the jet stream look like a capital W across the United States. Ever from 2004 to 2009, it was like that pretty consistently. It was a consistent anomaly, this capital W. Now, the capital W is twice, at least twice the size and twice the height and twice the width, this jet stream. The beginning of the W starts way up in the northern Pacific around Alaska, comes back down and dips all the way down into the Gulf of Mexico, and then that's just the first trough of the W. The remaining trough goes up into the North Atlantic. So now we see an extreme
accentuation of the jet stream. John, let's not get too technical because then we lose the thrust. So
okay.
What you're trying to say is that some of the effects, of course, are storms, right? And earthquakes?
Yes. All sorts of meteorological severe events, weather, hailstorms, flooding, inundation. At the same time, you have droughts, extreme droughts, temperature swings that are just bizarre from one day to the next, snow, rain, you name it. Everything meteorological that can be severe and disastrous, these are the signs that you will see and we are seeing. In addition to that, you have geological disasters, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions. Oh, I wanted to mention, there has been a frightening increase in the number of sinkholes that we're seeing. We've been following this. Sinkholes that are, some are small, some are large. I have numerous photos we're getting from the Internet of places around the world where huge highways are split across big chasms, across a highway, across a stretch of many acres of land. We have right now, just yesterday, on the Weather Channel and also in the news, they have showed this photograph of an aerial photograph of a town, looking down on this town in Germany. The hole in the ground was the size of about 5 houses. That's how big it was.
Wow.
Very deep hole. Then Weather Channel, yesterday, they showed another picture of St. Lucia, one of the islands in the Lesser Antilles.
Right.
A huge chasm. This highway was split right across. It was an 18-foot gap. People were looking down into this chasm, and they said it was so deep you couldn't even see the bottom.
I get your emails, John. I always read them. I do delete some other people's, but I read yours. And I've seen some of the ones you sent with these sinkholes. And they're unbelievable. They're like volcanic craters. Some of them are so big.
Yes, and we've never had this before because you would have been seeing it in the news. Just think about it. They would have been in the news over the years if these were normal events. But they're not, because now you're starting to see these crazy things, and even the commentators on the news are saying, wow, look at that. So this is a clear sign that something's happening to the Earth. And I can tell you, and I know you don't want me to go into detail, but so I'll make it really brief. But the mechanism by which these sinkholes are occurring, it's called mantle plumes. If you read a geology book, you'll find out that mantle plumes are sort of like, I'll give you a quick analogy. Do you ever make pudding, chocolate pudding? When it begins to thicken and you keep the gas going, what happens is these little vents of steam start popping up, plopping up, sort of like a volcanic area in the pudding, because all the steam is rising up. It's forcing a vertical tunnel up through the pudding. Well, that's what's happening to this pudding-like magma layer, very thick, 1,800-mile thick magma layer that goes deep into the Earth. The center of the Earth is mostly molten iron, and that acts like the gas range, the gas flame on your stove, whereas the magma surrounding this mostly molten iron core is like pudding in the pot. And now this molten iron is getting very hot. It's like the gas flame being turned up because of the magnetic fields that are interacting with Earth, coming from the sun and coming from other celestial bodies. Are magnetic interaction. It's like a microwave oven heating up your food. Well, it's heating up the center of the Earth, causing these mantle plumes to come up like a lava lamp, like the mantle plume in a lava lamp in someone's bedroom. And now the plume comes up and it disturbs the crust of the Earth. It causes a depression, a loss of structure. And now you see sinkholes occurring because of the Earth's molten iron core is getting hot and boiling the Earth's mantle.
Well, you know, John, I've been reading a little bit about this, and, you know, I have a scientific background as well. And I forget how many meters deep they said it was to the core of the Earth.
I think it's 1,800 miles, the mantle.
Yeah, I think it was. I heard it in meters, but I think you're right, from the mantle, yes. And they had said that the various articles I was reading said that they have never seen this much activity going on in the core, and it needs to escape. And of course, one of the predictions, and I know you're familiar with this, is, and again, this has to do with Wormwood or Planet X, but is Yellowstone. And I was just wondering what you thought of that.
Well, it seems it seems to me that already, as Yellowstone and most volcanoes are probably formed by mantle plumes that occurred in the ages past. So that's just basically a dead mantle plume that's at the root, like a dandelion root that goes deep into the ground. I believe mm-hmm. that's an ancient mantle plume that feeds up through the Yellowstone caldera. And it is going to heat up again and explode. It has to. As the Earth's molten iron core heats up, all the extinct dormant volcanoes are going to become active. They have to.
John, is there any way in your mind that you think you could possibly be wrong about this, that maybe you thought it was going to happen? And I remember reading that 1983 article in the Washington Times, I believe it was, where NASA had admitted there was a Planet X, and then you had explained to me that they certainly silenced them, and you thought there might have even been some murders. But could, in your mind, is there any way you might think you could be wrong?
No. I'll tell you why. There's no way it could be mistaken, because there are so many different sources, diverse fields of study that all converge with the same conclusion that this event is going to happen at around this time. One source is the Bible, God's Word. Another source is ancient archaeology. Another source is ancient history. Another source is the Ippor Papyrus from the Egyptian historians. And we know the periodicity of this thing. Every 36 and a half centuries, we've already shown that it comes in regularly. We've measured the time, and I've checked out the indexing. I don't know if too many people have done this, but I've checked the index points chronologically, and there's 36 and a half centuries between now and its point and the time of the Exodus from Egypt.
From the time of Santorini, John, before
yes.
Santorini, the 36 and a half centuries before that, is there any proof that it happened before
yes.
that as well?
Yes. The Great Flood of Noah's Day, there are two geologists, you can look them up, Pittman, P-I-T-M-A-N, and Ryan, who did studies on the Black Sea in Russia. And they found from the Black Sea that they estimate that the Great Flood did indeed occur around 5300 B.C. Okay, plus or minus a century or two. Now go back before that. Now we've got further evidence. The statistical information becomes overwhelmingly convincing. Go back another 36 and a half centuries prior to 5300 BC, and you land on around 9000 BC, that's the time when many ancient historians tell us they believe that the great sinking of Atlantis occurred around 9000 BC.
Wait. Now, you're making an assumption, buddy, right? I mean, you're saying you're assuming that there really was an Atlantis, and it's never been proven.
Well, no, we have archaeological undersea cities all around the world, 3,000 feet or so many thousand feet below, off the shore of Cuba. We found remains 40 miles off the coast of Florida. Is the Bimini Road. You can see that on YouTube.
I've seen it, and I know that they talk about that with Hemingway having studied the Bimini Road himself, and et cetera, et cetera. But nobody has been able to prove Atlantis ever existed. And I'm not saying you're wrong, John, because there's an inkling in me that says, well, why can't we explain this? But, you know, I'm not so sure that would be a fantastically unquestionable marker. I think certainly Noah's flood is, if that had anything to do with Planet X.
Well, these underground civilizations are found along the coasts of all the nations around the world, off the coast of Japan. Would that convince you? If you see a worldwide civilization submerged off the coast around the world, would that convince you that there was an Atlantis?
It certainly tells me it's feasible. I mean, I believe that it's very feasible, but I can't say that, in all honesty, John, even with a scientific background, I can't say that I could 100% believe in that any more than I could 100% believe in the mystery of the Bermuda Triangle. We don't have enough true proof. I have seen the undersea studies of the Bimini Road, and you know, when you look at that, you're absolutely right. It looks like that was a road to some civilization that was flooded out. You're right.
Not only that, there were temples, archways, pyramids. I have on videotape an expedition that went off 40 miles off the coast of Florida, and they found a pyramid structure. They did a sonar picture of it, of this pyramid without the capstone. This goes back to the occult practices that occurred thousands of years ago. This was off the coast of Florida, in the remains of the Bimini Road. Also, James McCanney has stated, and he probably has contacts with people in government, that the United States Navy has been excavating remains, undersea remains of Atlantis from the northern coast of Australia for a number of years.
Is that right?
Now. Yes. This is what McCanney says, and I believe that he has contacts that would have told him this.
But, John, Australia is quite a distance from the Bimini Road.
It's all over the world. They're all over the world. The continents were split or broken apart.
Now, well, I know they were broke apart from Pangaea. Yes, I do know that.
Okay, but so how did that happen?
Go ahead.
That happened in another great catastrophic event, incursion of Planet X. It caused the continents to split apart. You take Europe, as you know, and Africa, and they fit together pretty nicely into the face of the eastern shores of the North America, Central America, and South America. The only difference is that those areas that are submerged would cause a little distortion of the fit of those two pieces of the puzzle, the west and the east pieces. But right there is pretty much strong evidence of a breakup of the continents. What else is there? I just had something else in mind, too, that just slipped my mind. I can't think of it right now. But you know, we have
my club.
just look at the time. Just look at the time intervals, though, between these incursions. Even the Israelites, 1630 B.C.
Okay, back up one minute. I have a question for you that came across the computer. What do you call that? Cyberspace. Here it is. Says, question, what about the theory of, I'm trying to read it, Atlantis actually was Antarctica before a pole shift?
Well, actually, Antarctica it may have been part of Atlantis. However, we do know, there's been archaeological evidence showing that in Antarctica, they found a lake. There's a freshwater lake submerged. There is also an entire forest, 6 million square miles of forest that's actually frozen intact. And it would have to have been submerged very abruptly, or else if it were submerged very slowly over a period of several years, those trees would have died and you would have had submerged, frozen, dead trees. But these are submerged, frozen, green trees. So this 6 million square miles was frozen very rapidly in a matter of days. The only thing that would have caused that would have been a pole shift. We also have the mastodons. Now, this is solid proof. Goes along with the sinking of the forest. We have mastodons who had vegetation, tropical vegetation, in their mouths and in their stomachs when they were dissected. These mastodons were found frozen and under tens of feet of ice up in the Siberian Arctic. The only way they could have been taken up there would have been through a pole shift. Now, the pole shift occurs because you have a planetary lockup between the magnetic field and of this planet passing over Earth's head and Earth itself. So it's sort of like, it's like if you were somebody sitting down and their head represents planet Earth, and a guy comes up behind them and runs his palm over the guy's head and causes his head to slouch forward. That's what Planet X does to planet Earth. As Planet X loops over, you know, that great white shark looping over the planets, it causes it to vertically rotate. And God tells us that this is going to happen. He says in Isaiah 24:20, he says, I will cause the earth to reel to and fro like a drunkard, which means it's going to wobble. The top will always wobble before it topples. And
John,
then,
now let me ask you this. I know, sweetheart, you have lots of information, and I would love to get it all out and have a day-long, two-day-long show with you. But, you know, I've got listeners popping up all over the place asking me questions to ask you. And one of them is, so the signs are showing up now. I'm reading the question to you. But when is the rough estimate of when it's going to hit, I guess it's UFL force again? Maybe they mean when it's going to hit here again or hit the area again.
Well, it's like I look at it as like a dimmer light. Don't look for the time when the light is going to be switched from dark to light, like immediately. It's ramping up. It's like a dimmer light. It's slowly being ramped up even now, right as we speak. And it seems to me, nobody can really predict. I'm not God, so I won't go out too far and make a foolish prediction. But all I know is that disasters will be ramping up over the next several years until they reach a point of utter destruction. God, our Savior, tells us that it's going to reach utter destruction. It'll be the worst disaster that ever occurred. But I want to bring hope to people. I don't want people to be scared. I want them to be prepared.
Understanding from what a lot of the things I've read, I'm not saying this is what God said, John, but my understanding was that we were going to die by fire, and many believe that fire would be a nuclear holocaust. But you're not saying that, are you? You're saying that this could be the result of Planet X, which isn't even going to touch our planet, but yet it's going to have such a gravitational force. It's going to totally destroy, will destroy the whole earth.
And the fire will occur. No, the Bible is, yeah, the whole earth. Now, the Bible is correct. That's why God will save us. God promises to supernaturally save all who call out to him, and many will call out to him in fear. So, but it's, 2 Peter 3:12 is absolutely correct, that the earth, elements will melt with fervent heat. And the reason would be is I woke up in the middle of the night one time, and I believe maybe it was an inspiration from God. I just sat up straight like a light switch turning on at 3 o'clock in the morning out of a dream. I was dreaming that I saw the entire world engulfed in red and orange, flaming, gray lava. And that, I said to myself as I woke up, so that's what the lake of fire is. If you stop and think of the lake of fire that God promises that all of those who shake their fist at God when he comes back and gives them a chance to be saved, and they refuse to be saved, they will go into the lake of fire. Well, there'll be people in China going into the lake of fire. There'll be people in Nigeria going into the lake of fire, people in Germany, people in Russia, people in Alaska.
Right.
How
right,
are you
hey,
going to get everybody
let's
into one little lake of fire?
John?
Is when the entire earth is a lake of fire.
All right, John, let's do this. Let's talk about, let's say we're in 2012 now. It's just starting. It's January 2012, and we know December's the big date, okay? So tell us what we as Earthlings are going to experience across that period.
Starting right now, the windstorms will be severe. I want people to be prepared. I can teach them how to protect their roof, keep the roof from being blown off. These are all physical things we do while keeping our minds focused and our hearts on God, talking to him in our thoughts as we work. Because
Amen.
Eventually we'll get to the point where physical preparation will be useless. It'll get so severe. But God promises to supernaturally save us. In the meantime, before then, let's prepare physically. Let's prepare that roof of the house, your windows, protect them from being blown out, etc. Protect yourself from floating away with the rainstorm.
John, hey, we've run out of time again. I'm going to have you back on, okay?
Okay, thank you.
I always love having you on. Listeners, please stay tuned. I'm so sorry John had to go, but listeners, please stay tuned. We have Eric Gilbertson coming.